Today on Valley Voices, we have two guests live in the studio and another joining us by phone. The goal of today's show is to explain the work of Colorado Collaborative Divorce Professionals. My guests in the studio are Angie Buchanan, facilitator for collaborative law, mediator, and attorney based in Durango. Thanks so much for being here, Angie.
Thanks for having us.
And also in the studio with me here, Patrick Jansen, certified divorce financial analyst based in Denver.
Yes, thanks for having us, Gavin.
Thanks for being here, and I hope you get to ski while you're in the valley.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you guys making the trip. And then on the phone, we're joined by another special guest. Bert Dempsey is an attorney and mediator based in Boulder. Can you hear me, Bert?
I can.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Bert. I really appreciate you guys joining us today. So, Bert, let me start by asking you, what is collaborative divorce, and how is it different from the way we all think of traditional divorce and how it works?
Well, I'd like to start by just giving a brief history of this because it'll track to what we have.
Yeah.
In the mid-80s, a retired judge in Minneapolis, Minnesota, after many years on the bench, realized there was a better way. And he took several of his attorneys that he had worked with over the years, and that is what brought us to collaborative. What it is a process in which each party has an attorney, and the agreement between the spouses and both attorneys is that the spouses will not go to court with the two collaborative attorneys.
Right.
The whole process is focused on settlement right from the start. And there are meetings scheduled in which there are financial neutrals and a facilitator to help with the emotional aspects of the divorce. And it is all focused on settlement.
Right.
That's the short answer.
And explain, folks, for listeners, how you three all interact. In other words, it's not like we've got three people from one company and they're here to get you to hire them. It's all about the collaboration across different firms, people with different expertise. So maybe explain that a little bit, Angie. Like, how Angie, would you and Bert ever bump into each other in this process, or you guys are sort of regionally so far apart?
We're definitely regionally apart. I'm in Durango and he's in Boulder, but we practice the same. Our practice groups work on the same issues. So we could work together in terms of if we need mentoring or if we need advice. Other groups work together, but we're all under CCDP, the Colorado Collaborative Divorce Professionals organization in Colorado. And we're actually all three board members, I believe.
Yes, we are.
So you guys are a team in that way,
yeah,
in that,
yeah,
in that you're,
yeah,
helping to shepherd this project. And this is something that's statewide and also done in other states. Is this done in all states?
Yes. So predominantly Texas, you've got Minneapolis, California, Denver, and Colorado's is really starting to take off. But we're probably, from a state standpoint, from an adoption standpoint, we're probably a little bit behind. But a lot of momentum going forward, and because we're here, you know, you can tell we're starting to really form some momentum and get some energy behind this.
Well, and it's just so interesting to learn about whether or not people are in this specific situation themselves. It seems like such a this collaborative model is interesting. A couple things: each person retains their own legal representation, right? Now, what if you are in a bitter divorce and you have hired a lawyer who isn't trained in this, then does that mean you can't go through do you need a lawyer with this specific set of skills?
Do you want to take that one? I'll take it.
Yeah, sure. You're an attorney. Go for it, Angie.
All right. So yes, it's per practice group, but most practice groups have the model that if one collaborative attorney is trained, then the other one, if they agree to engage in a paradigm shift and not try to fight to win a case, but to try to fight to get their client's needs met in a collaborative way, then yes, you can work with another attorney who has not been collaboratively trained.
And you said paradigm shift. That seems like a really key point here that you guys are taught in law school. And Bert, talk about your own legal background. You're taught to go fight. You're taught to win, right? To take no prisoners. And so what was it like for you, Bert, as a veteran attorney to sort of shift your own thinking? Was that a an easy process because it gets better outcomes, or was that a challenge?
Well, it was a very personal shift for me, but I can share that. I got divorced.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I had a young child at the time, and still do, and it was not a good experience. And so very shortly after that, I took mediation training, and after that I took collaborative law training. So I know how people feel when they're in a divorce, with children particularly. And the main thing about collaborative law is we're looking forward. We accept the fact that something's broken, things have to change. How do we go forward from here in a positive way for both the parents and, if they have children, for their children?
Yeah, trying to find win-win solutions, even if people are at an impasse in their relationship. Talk about what kind of decisions people need to make as a marriage is ending. Like mediation, for example, it's not always appropriate.
Right. Right. So you can have certain cases where a judge just simply has to decide a case. There are several different types of examples. You can have certain personality types, perhaps, that it would not be appropriate. But I would say that for probably 90% of the population, collaborative law is a good solution for people. About 5% of the population is going to be able to work it out on their own. 5%. There's just not going to be any other way other than to have a judge if you look at it in terms of a bell curve. However, with collaborative law, obviously I'm a believer in it. My goal in getting into collaborative law was to keep children out of court from testifying, to end the dispute in a healthy way so that people can think about their extended families moving forward instead of I win, you lose, ha-ha, yeah, at the end.
Yes. It seems like one of the things that we hear about collaborative divorce is that this kind of process can help kids emotionally during the process. How is that the case?
You want to take that one?
Well, so we're actually focused on solving the collective needs of the family. So when you think about a traditional divorce case, the attorney essentially is saying, I have to do what's in the best interest of my client. So the paradigm shift that Angie refers to is, we're going to keep your interest in the forefront, but what's more important than that is, how do we solve the collective needs and the goals, which spills over into the family, into the kids, because kids are usually the ones that get impacted the most. So the team is focused on a dignified way to reach resolution where we're sensitive and focused on solving the collective needs of the spouses, which ultimately serves the children much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we also have objective neutral parties. Yeah. I'm just saying the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Objective neutral parties who will work with the team. So, for example, Patrick, in his work as a financial specialist, what he does is he will provide advice to both parties,
right,
that is neutral.
Yep.
He's just going to present the truth. The same thing, we can have a child specialist involved in a case if necessary. That, frankly, is pretty rare in my practice so far. And we can also, there is some practice groups use arbitration, some don't. So mm-hmm. You could agree to have some kind of binding arbitration at the end if you didn't reach an agreement. That's currently a debate around the state.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, Patrick, let me ask you a little bit more about the financial piece here. So as a neutral financial expert, where do you play into this?
So I have two customers. One, I need to support the team. The team, the two attorneys, the facilitator who's usually has someone with a mental health background. But more importantly, I want to get the most out of the collaborative process by being the neutral, by understanding what the financial options are, by having a keen focus on the impact divorce has to both spouses' financial future.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm modeling out, and we look at cash flow, so mm-hmm. Which is unique because in the traditional sense, the traditional process, I don't think cash flow is looked at. Cash flow is, do you have enough money at the end of the week to pay for bills? Divorce does one thing in all cases. It doubles your expenses. The income doesn't change short term. So what's the impact to both of you from a cash flow? Can you pay your bills? And if not, then what can we do to manipulate the financial settlement options so that we can find the ideal solution for our clients?
And you talk about cash flow, net worth,
right,
retirement savings.
Correct.
There's so many things that play in. And obviously, a happily married couple is often going to do their financial planning as a team, with the
Correct.
Idea that we're just going to be together forever. Right.
Correct.
So a lot of times these kind of safeguards are not put in
right.
to figure out that
right.
dynamic. And then what are kind of the areas of knowledge we talked about as we were getting
yes.
ready to come in the room, the three areas of knowledge?
So this is probably, excuse me, why I like collaborative so much is because almost all divorces, I can't think of any exception, there's three areas of knowledge that every client or every spouse going through divorce needs to understand. One is legal, and that's understood pretty well in our culture. The other one's the financial piece. And then I would say parenting, kids, right? And then there's sometimes an emotional or mental health component. So sometimes in the traditional process, it's wrapped around this ardent legal process. And we're not giving enough attention to the financial and to the parenting plan for the kids. So collaborative bears those resources, those experts from day one. And so that's a key difference that I would want the audience to know.
Another thing I want to ask you, Bert, and obviously Angie chime in on this too, but you know, this is a very private thing in people's lives that often plays out in such a public fashion. You know, the most public example of a pending divorce in the country right now, I would think, would be Jeff Bezos, the richest man in America, in the world, and his coming, divorce coming soon. And certainly different state laws affect how divorces play out in different ways financially.
Yeah.
But it seems like one of the other things about collaborative divorce is that it allows the process of a much bigger level of privacy.
Correct. You can even file in a different jurisdiction. There's no restriction that you have to file where you live. So the case is handled. The collaborative case from start to finish can be handled with contacting a collaborative attorney, making an appointment, finding out if collaborative is right for you, doing some research, and then going to the meetings. And then at the very end of the case, then what happens is the team who supported you throughout the process files the paperwork for you.
And Bert, has that been a shift in your career to suddenly be part of these processes with no court hearing?
Well, it's been a great improvement in my life.
I'm sure.
trying cases and all the stress in doing that, particularly for the clients, I really have a great sense of relief doing a collaborative case. But one thing I do want to point out is that the collaborative model is only a way to get to the same result as would be done through the court system. This is, so what I'm saying is, all the paperwork that has to be disclosed to each other, all the paperwork that has to be filed with the court, it's identical. It's nothing different. So this is just a different way of getting to the same result.
Meeting those same minimum requirements. And talk a little bit more about Colorado Collaborative Divorce Professionals. You mentioned that you guys are all on this board of directors. It sounds like this is a statewide organization. I'm guessing you probably do a lot of remote meetings in order to make this thing happen. It's not like you guys have the luxury of driving to Carbondale every time.
Go ahead, Angie.
I would say no, we have not been doing that because most of the collaborative cases have been on the Front Range.
Okay.
Yeah. But now that we have the Durango group, we're ready to serve the Western Slope, and we work with anyone on the Front Range as well. So traditionally it has not been across the state, but now it is available.
And we're doing the training beyond Denver. And so we're trying to expand that footprint because we understand the impact, the importance it has. So it's just not a Denver thing. It's just tough to get it going sometimes.
Right.
And having people adopt the model and embrace it and understand the value it provides to the consumer. But we're getting there.
And so in terms of the structure of Colorado Collaborative Divorce Professionals, who else participates in kind of facilitating this operation as a statewide way of thinking? In addition to, I mean, we have the attorneys, mediators, and then what does it mean to be a facilitator for collaborative law, Angie? Does that mean you're basically like running a chapter in Durango, kind of?
I like to say I'm driving the bus whenever whenever we have a case. So I hold the meeting similar to mediation. It's not mediation, but I direct what we talk about in that meeting, set our next meeting, and notify the court if where we are, if parties have already filed with the court. One other faction I would like to let you know about is that every judge I've talked to is on board with this.
Oh, nice.
Judges, surprisingly, don't really want to spend a lot of time in court listening to who gets what. Judges have other things to do.
Sure.
So whatever parties can work out, especially regarding their children, judges are very happy to have those agreements.
I want to ask you to excuse my ignorance on this, and I am happily married and have never even thought of looking into this stuff.
Good for you.
But I mean, we're not all that lucky. And so what are some of the basics of Colorado law? So one of the things people keep talking about with Jeff Bezos is he's in Washington State. And so in Washington, I believe, I forget what it's called, basically all the assets are split in half unless there's a prenup, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a community property state or not. In Colorado, the standard is what's fair and equitable. It's not 50-50.
Okay.
So Bert could probably tell you more about this, but also the court will always look at what's in the best interest of the child.
So Bert, just from a traditional standpoint, how is Colorado set up?
Well, Angie has really covered it. It's an equitable distribution state. What has to be established for the court in the settlement documents is that there is a reasonable sharing of assets and maintenance if it's called for in that case. And then, of course, the standard for decisions relating to the children is what's in their best interest.
So custody doesn't have a hard and fast rule. It would slide along depending on the relationship. I would think that mental health, addiction, poverty, a lot of these issues probably play into these things more than we might think. I mean, you guys would know, but I mean, the public might not realize. It seems like, especially with the opioid epidemic and with income inequalities, all these issues that seem like they probably make divorce even more difficult.
Well,
that's why we have a team.
Right.
Because if something comes up in that regard, if the people we have assembled to can't handle that, we can bring someone else in to do that. So this is we have a plan for the process, but it's a flexible plan. We're here to accommodate the needs of the divorcing couple.
So the basic premise, Gavin, is how do we keep this family moving forward? What does this family need to co-parent in the future?
So, and I'll add to that because I think your question is about, you know, what are the statutes in Colorado? The reality is when it comes to, at least from a financial perspective, we divide property. We have to determine whether maintenance is needed and how much and for how long. And
so, for example, one parent sends money to the other. Is correct. That what you mean by maintenance?
Yeah, maintenance. Alimony is what we typically refer to. And in child support, same thing. Does it apply and how much? The rules are a little bit more rigid around that. But the perception is from the consumer is that we're going to divide property 50-50. We're not a 50-50 state. We're an equitable distribution state. There's a guideline calculation for maintenance and child support, but it's a guideline. You can choose to use it, but you don't have to. So one of the other benefits of collaborative is that we can play with those financial levers, right? We can explore it. We can go where we need to go to find a better outcome for the couple. Whereas the legal process, in my view, I'm not an attorney, the legal process tends to, the boundaries are tighter and they prepare you for court. And the judge, I think a lot of times is going to say the default is 50-50 and I'm going to take the calculator out for child support and maintenance and we'll call it a day. Well, we don't have to do that, right? And a lot of people don't understand that there's some flexibility there.
Have the dynamics changed? Oh, go ahead, please, Angie.
One caveat. In my experience, judges, child support is what it is.
Yes.
And you can't modify it unless there are extraordinary circumstances. However, spousal maintenance is something that you can waive forever. Yep. It could be modifiable or non-modifiable.
Right.
But there is a formula in case you don't come up with an agreement. Just a clarification. Yeah.
In the time you guys have spent practicing law, and Bert, we haven't met in person, so I can't get a visual gauge on how many years you've been practicing law, but in terms of, you know, Angie obviously seems to me very young and has a real spark here. So I don't know, Bert, how many years have you been practicing law?
Let me see here.
Too many to count. Get the calculator out, Bert.
1982.
Oh, my gosh.
Whatever that is.
So the question is really just over time. Have you seen a shift in terms of maybe sort of our old-fashioned nuclear family idea of women doing more childcare, men earning more income? Has that shifted in the years that you've been there and dealt with family law? And also, it seems like as a culture, we undervalue the work of childcare. And child raising, and we say, you know, we have this idea like, oh, the wife goes off to work every day and the husband just stays around the house and does the dishes or whatever, you know. But in fact, that's a huge, it seems like that. So is that something you guys can take into account in this process to a degree of that maybe there was money in the bank from only one parent, but in fact, the work was really shared? I mean, I definitely think about it with my wife. We both work, mm-hmm. we both deal with the baby. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting, mm-hmm. but it's very much more of a 50-50 split. But it's not always financially.
Yeah.
Right, but that's the beauty of the word equity.
Right.
What's fair? It's what you think it is. So it's what you bring in, what she brings in.
Right.
I would like to add that collaborative law is also appropriate in post-decree matters. We could help people who have already had a divorce and are still having issues later.
Oh, okay.
It's a possibility. We can help people who are LGBTQ, and a lot of us have been trained in that. So there are lots of different ways that we can help communities. It's really, how do you want to move forward? Again, do you want to win? And what is a win in a domestic relations case? Is it getting out quickly, getting out with fewer scars,
right.
and figuring out your future? I would argue yes.
That's Angie Buchanan, facilitator for collaborative law, mediator, and attorney based in Durango. Made the drive up to KD&K for this conversation, and we really appreciate it, Angie. We've also been hearing from Patrick Jansen, certified divorce financial analyst based in Denver, and on the phone, Bert Dempsey, attorney and mediator based in Boulder, doing this a long time, Bert. Thank you for racking your brain on that question. And when we post this interview to the KD&K website, probably by tomorrow, we'll link to all three of these folks so you can track them down. They're not here today to try to get you to call them up and hire them. But I just think this is such an interesting, new direction for people to go in this very contentious time. Again, whether it's the privacy, the win-win of trying to find solutions that work for both. And I really love that this is a way that potentially you save children a lot of the emotional strain of going through court testimony and all this stuff. It just seems like there's a lot of potential here, and Colorado Collaborative Divorce Professionals have been leading the way on this. We're really thankful to have you guys with us in the studio, and I'm gonna have to leave it there. Bert, you have 10 seconds if you want to add one last comment.
I just want to say thank you for having us on, and it was a great opportunity to spread the word.
Yeah, well, let's follow up and hear how it's going as you continue to develop the Western Slope interests. And again, folks, you can get the contact info from KD&K tomorrow to reach these folks, whether you're on the legal side or on the mediation side or thinking about a divorce. I just want to thank you guys all again for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thank you.